This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast. I'm Paul, your host. This podcast is all about Porsche and their cars and the people and the technology and the engineering that goes behind it. You'll find your Porsche stories, which is us, me, talking to you about your Porsche, your journeys and your life experiences with those cars. Tech Talk, which is all about the technical aspects of Porsche. Waffle, which is just me whittering on about basically anything with some friends, and Heritage, which looks at the entire journey of Porsche from the earliest days to the present day. If that sounds interesting to you, then stick around. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to episode 34 of the podcast. It's Thursday, and that means it's a podcast drop. This week we're picking up on a Heritage Edition episode, so if you've been over to the YouTube channel already, you would have seen the full episode on YouTube, including a drive out. And that drive out is with PJ Gibbons. PJ and I met quite a while ago now. I'm almost edging towards the episode itself, so I'll stop a little short of that. But we get on brilliantly. We chat constantly now, and one of the things that's really lovely about doing this, particularly the Heritage episodes, many more of them are going to be coming out soon, and that is the friendships that I pick up along the way, and the getting to know people and some of their life experiences that they share, and the sense of, I guess, the depth of those relationships. What's really important to me is, and what I really hope comes across actually and translates, is the fact that they aren't, although they're 1 hour or 45 minutes worth of conversation, typically quite a lot goes on before and after, and some of those relationships and friendships last and stay in touch. Some of them don't, obviously, but I really hope you think that actually when you listen to them, you get an appreciation for the fact that I'm really interested in the person's life story as well as the car. As the intro says, this is all about the people. This is all about the people, this podcast. If you haven't subscribed already to the YouTube channel or the podcast itself, please do. That's always a huge appreciation. Viewing figures have gone up again. It's a really, really rewarding thing to do when you get some feedback. You can do that by reaching out to me, info@rengineering.com, if you want to be on your Porsche stories. So that's a smaller version of Heritage. If you've got a car that you just want to have a quick conversation about, or let me know what's happening, we can do that. If you want me to come out and shoot, preferably it'd be in the UK, unless it's timed really well with the trip. And the next trip I've got coming up is late April, and I'm heading to Belgium and then Germany. So if you live in Belgium and you've got a really cool Porsche and you want to tell a story about it, then get in touch. Or if you live anywhere near the Nürburgring, because that's where I'm heading out to, the Ring, and you've got some track weapon that you want to talk to me about and shoot, then give me a heads up. And you can reach me on Instagram as well, at RengineeringUK on Instagram, or Rengineering everywhere else. Short intro this week. I'm not going to go into too much detail because the episode is pretty big itself. So I hope you're all doing very well. Thank you for some of the lovely comments I've had over the last couple of weeks. They've been really, someone said I had a soothing voice. Yes, it makes me instantly want to do a Barry White impression, but I won't. Anyway, here is PJ Gibbons and me sitting down to talk about his Porsche 356A and his story on Heritage. I'll catch you back up at the end.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast. And my friend PJ Gibbons is just out of shot at the moment because we are setting up for this heritage episode. It's a very special heritage episode, and we've been planning this for months and months and months. We've never got there. But today is the day. So you can see his 356. We're going to get into that in a minute. We're also going to get into everything about his back history, classics of the clubhouse, the VW scene, the Porsche scene, how they mix together. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Engineering YouTube and podcast, and big thank you to PJ for A, hosting me, but actually spending a bit of time helping me trying to set the shot up. And you guys will know by now, I'm a bit of an idiot when it comes to this stuff. I love the presenting, I love meeting people, but what I don't love is the tech that goes behind shooting this stuff. I like the cars, the people. So yeah, it's a big thank you to PJ for helping me get some of this stuff set up. So if it looks better than it normally does, I can't take credit for that, it's all him.
If it looks worse than it normally does, I can't take credit for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's exactly that, yeah. yeah, PJ, thank you so much for joining me.
No worries.
Let's go. I always start these with going back to childhood, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then we kind of naturally find our path from there. So, if earliest car memories, where did that, like, what's the kind of genesis of your interest in, not Porsche necessarily, but just cars in general?
I was basically born into cars. Like, I didn't really have a choice. Like, okay. At the time, my old man was running Automotive Magazine. And so, so my weekends were spent at trade shows. You know, he was always bringing back, you know, model cars and everything, because that's what we did. Everything was promotional. And yeah, I basically was born into the business of cars and secondhand cars and the industry. So for me, there's never been a point in time where I haven't been involved in cars.
Really?
It's interesting.
How old were you then? Like, so literally it's
born into it.
There was, you know, your earliest memories are all still connected to cars and...
Yeah.
Wow, that's rad.
It was, as I said, going to events at weekends. We used to sponsor British touring cars.
Wow.
So, yeah. My dad...
What sort of year was this?
Well, my dad co-founded Auto Trader.
What?
Yeah, man.
I didn't know that.
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, man. So that's what we used to do. He started it in 1977 with John, who was his partner, and they ran it up until they sold it, which I think was around 2000, 2001.
Wow.
So, yeah, I've got the first and last issues in the office.
That's mega.
Yeah, rescued from a fire as well.
Really?
yeah.
So. Wow. Okay. So that's a pretty good start. So
yeah. So like I said, I couldn't have been more born into cars, really. If I
did that come naturally though, or was it? Because
I've never forced into anything.
You weren't.
No.
There was none of this like super dad. You know, you're going to be the next Formula One driver or anything like that.
No, not at all.
That's so
not
cool.
We, as I said, my dad, we used to do these promotional cars. I don't know if you were a subscriber or whatever. Or we sent them out, but. So every time one of those came out, he'd bring it back for me. So all these tiny little Auto Trader cars, like throughout the years. And then it got into Matchbox, Hot Wheels. I used to always have them, you know, lined up in a row, and remote control cars. And then, yeah. So
if you're like me, if I think back to how old I've been, single figures, probably like 8, 9, 10. It was like... And I remember sending off to Kellogg's, they like had these little, you'd save some tokens and you'd send the tokens off and you'd get Ferraris and I think
F40,
F50. Do you remember that?
No, I also remember Shell as well.
Shell did it as well, yeah. And I had loads. I don't even know where I got the tokens from. It must have been Kellogg's or something like that anyway, Shell. But yeah, and the same thing there. And I was, and this won't, if you know me even a little bit by now, you'll know that I'm a bit of a clean freak. Even my Matchbox cars were really, like, not ordinarily clean. They were it feels like, again, looking at your 356, like you're the kind of, not the opposite.
I am the opposite.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was that the case back then as well? Were you kind of just like, crash,
throwing
them around?
But do you know what it was, man? It's like, I was like a major perfectionist as a kid.
Right.
So again, like actually I've changed, but I used to get really irritated if like a toy got chipped.
Okay, I feel better now straight away.
Or if the stickers got ripped. And then at that point I'd be like, all right, I don't want it anymore. Like I was really OCD about it. And then I think I got to the point, actually, to be honest, with this car, if we go back a little bit more, the first classic vehicle I got, I restored immediately.
Right.
So I drove it around for about a month, and then it was like straight into restoration.
What was it?
Beetle.
Okay.
I still have it.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and it sort of ruined it, if I'm honest. Because
really?
Every single drive you take, and you get a stone chip. When you restore a car, you start from here.
Yeah.
And every moment afterwards is a reduction in
perfection.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So I got to the point where I was like, I don't want perfect vehicles anymore. I want something that I can drive, enjoy. Doesn't matter if bits fall off it. It is what it is. It's honest. But if I was to do something to it, if I was to scratch it, then I would be upset about it.
Right. So like going back to post Matchbox, but like you were talking about RC cars and things like
that, right?
So. Were the RC cars all perfectly painted and like curated in terms of how they were put together, or were they like
just
aerosol? And
no, they were ones. I've never really been very patient to paint things. I'm not particularly mechanical or technical. I never grew up on Lego at all.
Okay, good, right. Yeah.
I'm more about the aesthetics.
Fine.
So I was happily just buy a pre-built one.
Okay.
I could rip about and have fun.
Tamiya stuff. And
all that
stuff.
Nico. Yeah. Or Nico, whatever it was.
Well, whatever they are, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like that kind of stuff. Like, still nice, but yeah.
But they're used and jumped around and
still
whatever.
Got them.
Have you?
Yeah, still got them.
So. I'm going to try and ask PJ to dig a couple out and I'll put them in.
They won't work.
They won't work. That's fine. Cool. Okay, so. Let's move to...
Go on. To interrupt you, but in terms of like cars, the ironic thing is my dad isn't particularly interested in cars. So...
I mean, more confused now, so...
Yeah, it's really weird.
That is weird, isn't it?
So he's not particularly fussed about them. He has a car that he's very proud of, and he drives it and he enjoys it, but he's never wanted a sports car in his life.
Was it the entrepreneurship then? Or what was the interesting thing? Because
he was just in print.
Publish, yeah.
And he loved sales.
Right.
So he loved... You know, chasing sales, making sales. He was always like top of his quarter or whatever.
Sure.
He used to work at the Reading Evening Post. And then, you know, him and John eventually got into discussions to start this business. And it definitely wasn't for a love of cars. It was for a love of business and, like you say, entrepreneurship. So
it's probably capitalizing on a growing interest in cars. Because cars at that point, if you're thinking about mid-late 70s, they were changing from this, you know, 50s, 60s. Things were pretty...
Yeah.
Awkward still, didn't, you know, you had things like Porsche where it was much more modern, but for the most part, they were crap. Designed to last 5 or 10 years, and then you hit the 70s, something had changed, right? Mm. And it felt like there was more investment and there was more of a community around cars at that point. It felt like that. Not that I was there, but that's what it looks like.
The thing is, as well, is Auto Trader didn't start off as Auto Trader, it started off as Thames Valley Trader. So it's literally just like a secondhand magazine selling cars. The first one actually has a house on the front cover. So it was clocks, houses, cars, caravans, boats, anything. And then I believe that the car element of it was what was successful and took over, and then they went with it.
So they were just listening to the audience and kind of or just looking at the viewing figures, see which episodes hit, which ones were a bit less, and going, cool, that's what we're chasing.
It's a modern day version, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the guys at, a good story is when they were setting it up and they were trying to get distribution and stuff, they'd go to like WH Smith's, and the then director of WH Smith's said to them, have you got your shirts riding on this? And they said, well, yeah, we put everything into it. And he was like, well, put them back on because this hasn't got a hype in hell.
Wow.
Yeah, so WH Smith's basically told them to give up and walk away. And then they got a letter.
Man, you've got to have some confidence, haven't you? Especially if you've got everything riding on that.
Yeah, they got a letter of apology, so.
I would frame that. I don't know about you.
I don't know where it is now.
You'd want it to live somewhere, wouldn't you? And it would just be like an example of where if you've got strong belief in something and you instinctively know you're doing the right thing, just chase it.
Yeah, but it's definitely true. But yeah, so I grew up on cars. I grew up in mostly, my old man was into like Land Rovers, Range Rovers, like living around here, that's what you kind of needed.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
But then my mum was the one that always had the like stylish cars. So she had a couple of 911s and Mercedes and stuff like that. So that's her taste. Was always slightly better than my dad's.
Of course. So what, because one thing I've noticed a little bit is that I've still got my first car, I've still got this. Those 911s, do Do you know where, what happened to those or not?
No idea.
No idea.
No, sadly not. It was 2996s, blue and a black, C4S, I think. And
you got photos of them, though, I think.
My parents were terrible with cameras. They? Yeah, okay. I don't get that from them. Nah, man. But I remember them very distinctly. Yeah, like tan interiors, like that kind of like peanut butter kind of.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's so cool. I'm kind of glad that things are moving on from, you know, bog standard black interiors like fairly subtle colours.
Yeah.
That definitely seems to be a thing around at the moment of just being a little bit more daring. I love it.
There's a whole psychology to car colours, isn't there? It's really
is there?
Interesting. Yeah.
Teach me, mate. I don't know.
Well, it's all to do with like austerity and stuff. It's really
I have heard this. Yeah. And it's the same with watches as well. There's like that 80s period where Rolex Presidentials and things like that, the more yellow gold you can, the more gems you can set into the dial, the cooler it is, because things were booming, right? And then suddenly steel watches became a real thing in the kind of early 90s because it was just things were on its ass.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, you look at the colours in the 60s for vehicle versus like the 70s where everything went to like browns and more like natural.
It's almost sepia. Everything was kind of like viewed through.
Yeah, fuel crisis.
What
was it? Fuel or oil crisis. But and then, you know, through the 2000s after the financial crisis or whatever, it's just grey, black, grey.
Wow.
It is interesting. I quite like that kind of stuff.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
So let's go to your Beetle then, mate. So what is the spec of your Beetle? Because I would have normally said, what was it? But you've got it. So what was it?
I mean, that's the second car I ever bought. And it was my dream was always to own a bus.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as a kid, like I had like Volkswagen calendars and stuff like that. And the toys and buses were too expensive. I bought a Beetle 63 beryl green. I only had like four owners from new. Lovely little car, real honest, right-hand drive UK car. I still
source
know,
locally or
yeah, actually from Reading.
Was it really?
But I know like several of the owners from the back in the day as well, so yeah, it's a lovely, honest little vehicle that's running a supercharger. So yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. It's so what in stock otherwise, but
is it? But it's running a supercharger.
Period Judson supercharger.
Wow. Is it cool? Is it super whiny? Almost like it's got a straight cut gearbox. That like wee.
It actually has a horrible noise.
Is it? It's not like really, proud really of, not loud. That classic supercharger noise.
No, but it did make a little difference to the performance, which was cool. Yeah. So.
It's from like 65 brake to 80 brake or something like that.
It's not 65 that bad. It's like 30 horsepower.
Oh, is it? Oh,
yeah. It says the supercharger claimed to double the horsepower, but. I think me getting out would do more for the car's performance.
But
that's a lovely little car, and I'm very, very happy that I've kept it. My girls, you know, argue about who's going to get it when I'm gone.
That's
so
nice.
Yeah, I try to make memories of all the cars, to be honest.
Yeah, that's what it's about, right?
Yeah.
For me, anyway, that's the one thing that's changed with me is, again, going from trying to preserve everything in a time warp to this trip, this Alps trip I did this year, and the car picked up a few bruises along the way.
Yeah,
it was inevitable, right? But that, I think, has helped me kind of just get over that a little bit. I don't think I'm ever going to be quite as chilled as you, but if I can just inch forwards and be like, no, that's cool. That little lump there is all right. That's okay.
The thing is, it's hard when it's like a nice, new, shiny car, but when it's like a manky old thing, like it's much easier to accept a dent or a thing or... Yeah, but...
And I sit in both camps, right? You know, like, Alex Nash's car is stunning, right? It's perfect.
Oh, that is
beautiful.
Heck of a car.
But it's the total opposite of this. That is...
Dude, his is fast as well.
It's fast, right?
Yeah, man. I followed that up sheer hill climb, and I was... Yeah, I thought this was quite a quick little 356, but I was really struggling. So, yeah, he really ripped it.
Yeah, he's a good guy as well.
Beautiful car, that, as well.
Yeah. So... Let's talk about the community then. So your Beetle, mate, was that when you started getting into the VW community or is it?
Yeah. What do I do about this?
Oh, grab it, mate. Please grab it.
Sorry.
No,
camera.
Come on.
Hello, mate. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Okay.
That's fine. Don't worry.
Mm-mm. Sorry about that.
Please don't apologise, mate.
Must apologise.
So let's talk about the VW community. You've got your Beetle, you learned to drive, passed your test. You're free for the first time in your life. Is that when it kicked in? The kind of like, actually, I really need to immerse myself in the community, or was it before that?
My kind of like first dive into car culture was actually more like boy racery stuff.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, because I had
I feel better now, because I was such, I was like, if you're outside of the UK and look at the viewer figures, it's a mix of all over the world. So there's a term called chav in the UK. I was one of those. You can look it up, but effectively it just means somebody that's a bit of a pain in the bum, drives around like an idiot, terrorises the local community in the crappiest car possible. My car was a 1983 Vauxhall Nova in brown, 1 litre, with some horrible gold wheels. I mean, you couldn't have made it up. So, you must have been cooler than that, mate.
I don't know. No, I was lucky I had a nice car, but that's what got me into it.
Car
customization, I would really say, is like car modification. Mm. That's kind of like where I kind of sit, really. But I always loved classic cars. So like I had this Mini for a while, the BMW Mini, sorry. That was my kind of daily, which we modified and took it to like a quite high standard in terms of
R53 supercharged work.
It was a one, but it was polished, ported and everything, and it was it was, you know, reportedly around the same kind of figures as a Cooper S.
Wow.
From a one, yeah. But it was wicked fun, man. And then I sold that, bought the Beetle, and with air cooled culture is lovely.
Mm.
Like, it's a really nice, really mellow community. I adore it. Like, I've some of my best friends I've made through it, and you know, the air cooled kind of scene in both Porsche and Volkswagen is really quite similar.
Really?
Especially with the earliest.
There must be some crossover in terms of.
Oh, massively.
It's
I always describe the 356 as a Volkswagen person's Porsche.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Like when you're into Beetles and stuff, a 356 is just kind of an evolution.
Right.
I don't necessarily look at it and
see a Porsche.
I mean, I do, but I really see like the two together.
Yeah. That's what it was, wasn't it, at that point?
Yeah, it was the Volkswagen sports car.
Yeah.
So that's what it was originally developed as.
Yeah.
And you can see it, like, all over the vehicle. It really is. It really is a true kind of Porsche design, if you compare a Volkswagen to Porsche.
Yeah, if you have them parked next to each other, you can kind of see where it all joins up.
Massively, yeah.
I mean, again, I'm not an air cool guy, and I don't mean that as in, it's just through the natural way you kind of progress through cars. It never, I was a chav, so I had like chav cars pretty much. But do they drive in any, like, how do they, you know, if you back to back your Beetle into this, how much of the feel would be similar, and how
it depends how you tune things up,
right?
It really, really does. Like, I would describe a 356, driving a 356 is the kind of love child between a 912 and a Beetle.
Fine, okay.
It's somewhere in between there. It's got this one, like, now it's had all the work that we've done, it handles like an absolute dream. It's really, really good.
Right.
But then it's not super powerful. Yeah. So it's like you drive it quickly, but you have to maintain that speed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's so many, the characteristics are really similar. I used to have a hot Beetle before this as well, a split window Beetle, which had a 356 motor in the back.
Right.
And that was lovely, but this handles better than that did.
Right, okay.
But not a million miles, not a million miles.
I'm just trying to think about, and I'm not going to ask you for like specs or anything like this, but the wheelbase of a Beetle is narrower, I think. Or is it slightly, it looks like, and it's...
That's a really good question.
Because I'm wondering how much of it is down to the fact that Beetle's a taller car, probably a little bit, you know, squashed in.
Yeah.
The tyres are thinner ever so slightly, so I wonder if all
that's
of that, actually, if you decked a Beetle, that was wide.
Yeah.
Close it would be, I don't know.
I don't think it would be far. Honestly, the technology that's on it is identical, near enough. It's just better quality.
Right.
I say that it's better quality. A lot of the parts are interchangeable, but
right.
I assume from factory it was better quality because it definitely seems to cost more on the internet. So.
Yeah. Well, anything you pee on the front, it's a tax, isn't it? Cool. Right. So we've naturally drifted into talking about 356. So,
yeah, we have.
But I do like to progress things through the sort of natural course of time. So Beetle, Mini One, Beetle, where from there?
Oh, man. In terms of Volkswagens.
Oh, have you had loads of cars?
Well, I reckon I'm probably pushing about 25.
Okay. I'm not going to expect you to go through 25. So
well.
Give me the highlights.
I've had several buses.
Okay.
A Karmann Gear, Beetle, Mark 1 Golf. I had a really lovely Mark 1 Golf. Caddies. Just been through it all, really. Several like Mark 5, Mark 6, Mark 7 Golf.
Oh, okay.
Sirocco's, yeah.
Were those the dailies when the classic stuff was kind of...
Yeah, man. Like I said, I had the Beetle was restored to a level, compared to like high-end restorations, not that much. But, yeah. I mean, I kind of did that when I was 19.
Any sort of restoration at 19 is impressive.
Yeah, it was, for me, that was a lot of money.
I bet.
And it was terrifying. So it kind of sat in a little...
cocoon.
Yeah, not literally, but only because I know you can buy those. But
yeah, not sponsored, by the way. Although, if Carcoon wants to sponsor the channel, they can.
Please get in touch.
Please get in touch. Yeah.
Yeah, if they want to sponsor me, also I could do with a better cover.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just sat in the garage, and I was terrified to drive it. So that's when I started buying crustier cars.
Fine. So that's crusty but usable, or crusty and basically
mechanically sound.
Fine. Okay.
But just crunchy looking.
Yeah.
So, I just found I got a lot of enjoyment out of owning those.
Yeah. Were you okay to, was it a catch and release thing? Because 25 cars is a fair few. So, I'm on 40 something, I think.
Ooh.
And I've had some crap along the way, right? Mm. So, apart from the chav cars of the early days, things that have had a little bit of MOT just to limp me through to the next MOT, I've done all that. So, if I took those away, I've probably had, same as you, 20 something cars.
Yeah.
But I'm always promised myself that next car would be the one I keep, and then I get to a point where I've kind of spent some time and money with it, and then I'm just at that point of I really want something else, so I've got my eye kind of looking.
So was it
catch and release, or was it the same as me, the intention of keeping it for a long time, and actually that
for at least in the early stages, every vehicle that I bought I intended to keep if it was a classic.
Yeah.
Modern cars, not so much.
Sure.
As much as modern cars are lovely, I don't tend to find so much of an attachment to them.
Fine.
But I never really had anything that was like crap, if I'm completely honest.
I was
quite good at finding the right things. The only vehicle I had that I did sell rather quickly was a Karmann Gear, and that was purely because I bought it for restoration. And then when I started getting estimates through, I was like, I can't do this. So I moved it on.
Was that a financial decision, actually? It's just not the equity in the car. Sometimes if you start with something, you really need to know that if you spend 25 grand doing it up, it's going to be worth 25 grand at the end.
When you're into Volkswagens, man, there's
scrap the idea?
Yeah, the ceiling is quite low.
Is it?
At least it used to be.
Mm.
It still is to a degree, but if you're restoring a mid-60s Beetle, you're never going to get your money back.
Fine, okay.
I've owned my car for 15 years, and if I only took the money I'd initially invested, I am probably close to breaking even on the restoration to the value of the vehicle, but not all the rest I've done.
Fine.
So,
okay.
It's unlike, certain other vehicles, you kind of learn with VW that you're not always going to make a profit. You're not necessarily in it for that. In fact, my worst financial decision was selling a vehicle and then a decade later buying it back.
Really?
Yeah.
Which one was that?
It was a split window pickup.
Okay, right.
Not that one.
Which is freaking cool. We'll get some B-roll of that as well.
Cheers. I bought that for... I don't usually talk about money, but I bought it for five grand about 15 years ago. And then to get back into it was like four times that.
Wow.
Yeah. And
but if you've got a love for something, and actually
it had the same build date as my birthday,
right?
So I was like, I need it,
it's
back.
Gotta come back.
And then I drove it, enjoyed it, and then, you know, the bill started piling up for this one, and
fine,
it was like, gotta let it go. So I did.
But so hey, so we got a 911 next to us as well.
That's my wife's.
That's your wife's. Yeah, 911.
She's cooler than me.
She is cooler than you. Sorry, mate. You're a lovely guy, but she's cooler. Yeah, where, she is. What is this then?
It's a 964.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Cool.
It's not in that, it's white. We didn't intend to have matching cars at all.
Yeah.
But it was the right car, but not, it wasn't the colour she wanted, but it was the right car. So, yeah. Low mileage ish. Really solid right hand drive. Mm. And she wanted an auto. So we found an auto.
Perfect.
And which is really nice because for 964s, it makes them cheaper.
Yeah. Lovely.
But yeah, she's cooler than I am. For sure, as has been.
So I think we're just about arriving at the current fleet. So mm-hmm. Talk me through what the current fleet looks like, because it was a mix of VW and Porsche, right? So.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I never really thought of myself as a Porsche person at all.
Mm.
Really, like, I go back to my mum's cars that she had, and at the time I didn't really like them because they attracted bullying at school.
Wow.
So I was like, I don't want, you know, this or that. And I think that was one of the reasons why I went to Volkswagen. It's like a very humble vehicle. I wanted the polar opposite of what my mum and dad were into.
Right, right.
And gradually, you know, I opened my mind a little bit, and I remember seeing a photo of a 356 in a Karmann Ghia in like barn find situation.
Mm.
And I'd never seen a 356 at that point.
Had you not?
No. And I was like, what is that? That's like the ultimate Beetle.
It's like something from the future but the past at the same time.
Yeah, I love simplicity. Mm. And I think it's just the perfect shape. But anyway, I digress. I didn't want kind of like the same car as my mum and dad did. Okay. So I went for the Volkswagen, and my mate Simon had a 912 that he was going to sell, and I remember when he bought it, I didn't really rate it at all.
Right.
And he was like, I've got to sell it, I'm going to go traveling, and you should have a drive before, we knew each other through VWs for years, you should have a drive before I sell it. I was like, I've got no interest, mate, at all. He's like, no, go on, just have a drive. And I did, and it was like a light bulb, like it was like such an epiphany moment. Wow. Where I was like, oh my lord, what have I been doing?
I've been such a snob.
It was really bizarre. I was like, I can't believe you can have a car that looks like so classic and it drives so good. It was like getting in that vehicle was like, it reminded me of the very first time I ever drove on my own, like after you pass your test. It was a real epiphany moment because I've been driving like slammed buses, which are like, they're nice.
They look amazing, but
it's not a driving vehicle.
No,
you know, it's a milk float, really. And so to get into that and be like, oh my god. So I bought the car off him there and then.
Literally just like,
yeah, I was like, well, if you're gonna sell it,
he must have known. Like he was like, yeah, he just needs like a drive. That's it. Like that's all that needs to happen here.
Like a drug dealer is giving you samples. You know what I mean?
I'm a little bit this.
Yeah. You'll like it. I got a spider. And so yeah, I mean, it completely changed me. And yeah, from that point on, I mean, I always had wanted to own a 356. That was always my end game. And just through the VW scene and suddenly realizing how good a driving vehicle would be, I was like, okay, this is the direction I need to go in.
Right.
But before that, I also had a 944.
Oh right, wow.
An ST, which I absolutely adored.
So and that was, again, that's not hanging around, right? That's gone.
Yeah, it's gone. It was a lovely, lovely car, like white with cobalt interior. It's real, like,
that's cool.
80s spec. And I have really adored it. It was fantastic for cutting through traffic, and it looked cool and had pop-up headlights. And that was water on the bus.
We haven't just weed ourselves, by the way. We heard that. It was a triple, but yeah, it was nice.
I adored it. So I just sold after that when I just, sorry. Digressing.
Good for it.
When I went for the 356, I'd been writing my will, and I'd been sat down with like legal people and everything, writing this out. And I started to, like, I had two young girls. You know, my youngest was very young at that point, and it's like so which child is going to get this rusty Volkswagen? Which child is going to get this rusty Volkswagen? But they, would they prefer that rusty Volkswagen? So I was like, okay, I need to consolidate this and get rid of some stuff. And so I sold three vehicles to get into this one.
Right.
So I was like, I need to just sort it out. So at the time, I had the one green, the first Beetle I had, and I had this. And that was what I was going to stick with. And that didn't last very long, but that was the plan anyway. But yeah. So should I talk about finding this one?
Please, mate. Yeah, I was just literally about to say the same thing, is where, you know, this doesn't land on your doorstep. I don't, or maybe it does if you're really well connected and you're involved in the scene, but
no, not at all.
Talk me through. Yeah. where did this?
I found this on eBay. I think it was either eBay or it was Auto Trader.
In the UK?
Yeah. Yeah. It had come to the UK and it was Dover.
Okay.
I saw it. And the advert for the vehicles, I've said this a few times, but it was the most boring looking 356 I'd seen in my life. Like, I don't know what it was, whether it was the photos, it was just on the driveway.
White's a tough thing to photograph anyway. It's a tough colour, because if you
catch it, it's really difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it just reflects all light and it just becomes a blob.
Yeah.
So when something already looks like a blob,
and a really boring blob.
But it was really bad. Like, I could see from the photos that it was like chock full of filler. And I was like, I'm going to go to view this vehicle as an education.
Fine.
I was like, I'm going to go see it. I'm going to work out whether it's any good, what I should be looking for. Like, yeah. I mean, I've done, it's not my first rodeo. I've seen a million Volkswagens and gears and even a few Porsches, as I said. But and so we went down and, you know, I saw the vehicle and it was in a big warehouse by the sea, full of other really interesting vehicles. Early 911s, a couple of 356s, then like race cars that I wouldn't be able to tell you about because they weren't Porsche or Volkswagen. Sure. I don't understand them.
Yeah.
And
but interesting that its placement was immediately... Oh, okay. Someone at least has an appreciation of what this is.
Yeah, but I mean, this was sat under a big window, and as soon as I saw it, I did fall in love with it.
Yeah,
but I could see that it was going to be an absolute nightmare.
Really?
Yeah, like, it had accident damage on the front. Like, there's like a bit of crumpled, like the inner arch is really crumpled.
Right.
It was chock full of filler. The motor wasn't going to turn. Everything on it.
Classic.
Good.
I mean, this is the sort of car you really want to go after, right? The one that looks like an absolute bag. But
yeah,
so something landed with you though.
No, I walked away.
You did walk away.
Yeah, I walked away, and we decided it was just going to be too much of a hassle. I just finished.
It sounds like it. Yeah.
Well, that split window Beetle was something like a 5-6 year project,
right.
And I was like, I don't want another project. I want a vehicle I can get straight into, start making memories. Because I said, you know, this was slightly inspired by the idea that life is short.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of like, not like a midlife crisis entirely, but along those lines.
Yeah,
really.
Sure.
I need to, you know, if I'm going to get a 356, I need to get onto it really, because prices are only going to keep going.
So true.
And so we left, and I was like, the guy's price too high. I knew he'd already dropped the price because other friends had already been to see it.
Right.
And I was like, that's too much hassle, it's a project, you know.
And like you said, you were going for an experience and kind of dial in a little bit rather than
And then he called us up and dropped the price significantly.
Really?
And I was like,
just had some internal dialogue, was like, oh, I just want
to
do this.
He just wants it gone. Yeah. He could see that I was into it as well. I like a vehicle that's got some scars and dents and things, as you know. I think I was the right person to buy it.
Maybe it was a bit of that. It was like, you know, rather than just being clinical about it and going, I just want to get rid of the car, actually, maybe it was, this guy's really nice guy. I can tell it's going to get loved and it's probably going to get a bit of TLC, but still enjoyed, right?
So maybe, who knows? Maybe, who knows? But made the deal, and a couple of weeks later it turned up on the drive. And that was it, really.
So how long ago was that?
Before COVID, about a year before COVID,
okay,
I think. Yeah, I'd be able to tell you the date, and you can write it in the thing. But
that's fine. But
I think it's 2018.
Fine,
something like that.
But you said then, a couple of minutes ago, didn't want a 5 or 6 year project, but it doesn't look like a project now. So, what's the story behind getting it from, you know, crumpled inner wings and looking?
Oh, they're still there.
They are.
Yeah, they're still there.
I mean, I don't know whether you're being a little bit harsh, because it looks a bit road worn, but it looks like a, you know, early Strat. It doesn't look like a bag of crap. It looks like a really good vintage guitar.
Yeah, I like that. That's nice. So when
we got it, one of the things I liked was it had a load of stone chip on the front.
Yeah.
But the crack that you'll see in other angles, I was looking at photos recently, it was so small in comparison.
Really?
And yeah, it's like the heat from the exhaust has like flaked loads of paint off on the
back. I
love that though. And the front, as it's got hot, cold, and been through different flexing, and that sort of started to come out.
Because I wasn't sure if, you know, like you've got, again, thinking on the longer the guitar theme, you've got like Relic stuff, which is new, and it's like designed to look a bit like that. I would have completely understood if you were like, I'm going to preserve the areas that are natural but they're functional, and I'm going to kind of just manufacturally age the bits that I need to dress the car in, because I don't want to repaint it and restore it. But
this hasn't had any exterior paint from us.
Why is this?
No, and that was kind of one of the nice things about it, really, was that the paint was like, well, in the VW scene again, sorry to bring it back up, but a lot of us are really into original paint. I think the patina scene and the survivor scene is really strong in Volkswagen.
And it's like that way once.
Yes. So the car I previously owned, again, the split window, that was a barn find, like a real barn find from Sweden, untouched, like proper patina monster vehicle. Mm. And it became sort of similar to having a restored car.
Right.
In that it's so perfectly preserved.
Yeah, yeah.
You go, I don't want my kids to jump on those seats, or I don't.
Cause
it's like, I will have to repaint.
Is it? I would say it's worse, isn't it? Because
to a degree, to a degree.
Because like, it's not even like, if something you've restored, you're starting from a new blank sheet of paper, but you're not like, it's not.
You can repaint a wing on a painted car.
Who cares?
But you can't ever
get that back. And if it is like a time warp, then
I was happy to have something that had been painted but was tired.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very honest vehicle. I think that was one of the things that sort of sold it to me, really.
Right.
And the guy said it as well. He's like, I haven't repainted the bits that are crap. You can see it's got filler in it. You can see it's got damage. I haven't fixed that. I could have just done a blowover paint job.
Of course you could.
No one would have known any wiser.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, at least that's true.
It was standard, though. It was like, it hadn't been modified at that point, or had it been modified?
So it had a little bit.
Right.
It had it had late brakes on it, and it had a non-matching numbers motor, which for me
that
is
that frees
like,
you up a bit as well.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't want a car that I couldn't touch and ruin. So,
or even like, not to say it, but like, even if it's just other people's opinions about, you know, it's matching numbers, you can't do anything with that. Yeah. It's like, come on.
Yeah, no, I respect it if that's what someone's into. And
yeah,
the Mark One Golf I had, that had only done 27,000 miles.
Right.
And so with that vehicle, I was very much a custodian of a very original vehicle.
But that's almost like the Swedish barn find again, right? It's the same sort of thing. Whereas the freedom with something that's a little bit, you know, it's...
Oh, I love it. Yeah. First thing we did, drill holes in it, you know, to put the straps on. And, you know, and then it, as I said, it had been modified slightly. So, you know, sort of altered those modifications because it had later brakes on. So it had like a 911 pattern. So we then switched back to Wide 5 with CSP discs.
Yeah.
And that was like, I was looking at drum brakes. I was like, Jesus, like, I can get a set of 4 disc brakes for this from CSP for the same price as one corner. And I was like, nah, I'm going to go disc brakes.
Right.
So, original set of wheels, disc brakes. The thing that was very noticeable, like the motor was good. I got that rebuilt.
Yeah.
Beautiful. But the handling was shocking.
Just on the motor, was there anything that was done internally or not?
Gearbox as well. I was in for the motor.
When you were building it, yeah.
Did you do it? Like, it's a breathed on motor.
Fine.
It's like a little hot 1680. Is a Porsche motor. Like aftermarket stuff. So it's got Webers now.
Cool.
Yeah, four-tip exhaust. Then we rebuilt the gearbox at the same time. Then went through the whole vehicle and basically redid all the running gear, everything. It's got really, it just handles really well now.
New
steering box, everything. So that was like shocking. First time I drove it was around, probably around this time of year, maybe a little bit later.
Right. And we're in early November 2023 at this point.
Yeah, so midwinter.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was hammering down with rain and I was so excited to get the car back. I was like, I'm going to go drive it.
Wicked.
And the windscreen was ruined because whoever had painted it hadn't removed it. So it had loads of overspray on it that I didn't notice at first.
Right.
It was chipped. I was like, I can't see. This thing is sloppy. This sucks. I'm so disappointed in myself.
Oh, no.
Like, what have I done?
The reevaluation in your life and you're like, oh,
I was
no.
Like, I've made a huge mistake. So I was really gutted at that point, actually, to be honest. I was like, I've sold three vehicles that I really loved that were really good.
They were really sorted.
Yeah. And I've got like this vehicle that, and people were telling me as well, like, oh, you won't like the 356 after you've had a 912. Like, it doesn't
Why are they saying
well.
That? Again, like, it's part of heritage. I'm not an expert in air cooled stuff, so I am learning, right? So why would somebody in a 912 go, nah, you're not going to enjoy that, mate?
I think when you look at it in terms of like value for money,
yeah,
like a 356. You've got to be slightly unhinged to get one.
Right.
Well, because you're in the same kind of money as like a really good 911.
Yeah, yeah.
So why would you get a four-cylinder, like, fancy Beetle?
Yeah, okay.
So,
yeah.
Like, people at the time were like, don't buy a 356 because it won't be as good as you think it's going to be.
Right.
Buy a 911.
Right.
Because that's an upgrade from the 912 and, you know, you'll enjoy it. It'll be faster. It'll be... And, like, I completely respected that. But also, at the same time, I'm my mindset was 356. I had to scratch that itch. And people said to me, you know, don't meet your hero or whatever. And I was like, that's exactly
to that moment where you had some time, money spent on it, and then you were in it. And did that, were they echoes coming back into your head?
100%.
You're like, I just should have listened to them. They were
screaming
right.
Screaming in my ear.
Yeah.
I was like, this absolute bag of shit has sucked. I don't want it
anymore. I want a 911 now. Why did I do this?
Why did I? And I'm stuck with it and no one's going to want one that looks bad.
So you're kind of all in at that point. So
I knew I wasn't going to sell it. I was like, I'm pissed off with it, but I'm not going to sell it. And so, like, you know, my buddy Jack, like, me and him started to really hang out like post-lockdown when you were able to start working together and I was working on media and he was working on cars and stuff. So I started shooting for him and then we started working on it together.
Yeah, yeah.
And we kind of worked our way through it bit by bit, improving the handling, improving the way it drove, like taking it down to a rolling road and tuning the motor to the point where the car got to where I wanted it to be.
Fine.
And now I love it. It's so part of me. It's like, I don't know, cliche, but it's sort of part
it's
of the family.
It's got your DNA in it, yeah.
Yeah, man, this is my car.
Love it. And I saw this in Podium Place for the first time. And
next to the skip.
Next to the skip.
Standard.
And I've got plenty of pictures of this, so I'll chuck a few in. But the one thing I noticed was everybody else, me included, shepherded into a space. No, but whatever you like. And you weren't like that at all. You were like, no, I've got to get this aesthetic, the skip and a skip. Like, it's like chef's kiss. And I remember walking over and I quite politely was, do you mind if I ever look around your car? You're like, yeah, you were the coolest with it as well. But it was always that, like, wow, here's somebody that understands way more than I do about aesthetic and what you, and even, you know, it's just parking your car up, but you probably knew that some people are going to take photos of it and actually what a cool backdrop. And if they float around on social media, it's going to be a great shot.
That's
even if
true.
An idiot.
It does look good next to a skip. But it was sort of a running joke, to be honest, where like every place I ended up having to be the one that was parked next to a skip. So, but you're right. It did look good next to it and it suits it. And now I'm always happy to talk to people about the car and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, man.
So what next with it? Is it just as is, don't touch it, keep it, or have you got like big plans?
There's still little things it needs.
Yeah.
In terms of like electrical gremlins and stuff. Like, for instance, the horn isn't in the horn push. It's in a little button that's under the dash because at some point in time someone broke it and it was really difficult to get the push back off, so they just wired in a new one.
Right.
So I'd like to fix that.
I know. So it's like Biff Tannen's car from Back to the Future. Nobody can start this car but me. And he basically fiddles around in the dash and starts it. I don't know if I'd change that. For me, that's I know the instinct would be like, no, I need to fix that. But you know what? That's part of its history, you know?
It's just really irritating when you're trying to fix something under the dash and you like, I'll beep it for you as well. Right. It's the loudest horn in the world.
Right.
And you'll knock it and you'll be like, whoa, what the fuck? Do you know what I mean?
Fine.
Smack your head.
So it's a practical element is why you'd want to change it.
Yeah, and also like if you're in an emergency or whatever and you do need to beep, like your instinct is
fumbling around under the dash. Okay, all right.
Yeah, so from a safe, I'll leave the switch there and it'll be a nice reminder.
That's probably a cool thing to do.
Yeah. I'll wire up a Dixie horn or something. To be honest, my real goal at the moment is to just drive it.
Mm.
And I've had, because it's been a longer project than I estimated, you know, there has been a learning curve. There's been, you know, days spent by the side of the road trying to fix an oil leak or this or that. And, you know, Jack very much helped me fix, well, he fixed it, to be honest. But there's teething issues with a car that's been neglected and forgotten, and you know, the story was that this was sat by the side of the road with the bumpers hanging off, and that's one thing I heard. And then the other thing was it was in a big estate sale and it was not purchased and blah blah blah. But you know,
are they, so again, like teaching me a little bit, are they must be pretty well documented. There can't be that many in the country, so they must all be known by now, surely.
This one came from California.
Okay, fine.
And it was also in North Carolina for some reason. But
weird.
Yep. And I only found that out through doing some work on the internet and finding an old for sale ad for it.
That's so cool.
Originally went to New York. It was imported by Max Hoffman.
Right, wow.
Build date of September 11th. So if you're American, 9/11, 356. So yeah.
Wow.
So it came from the States, and I don't really know much about its history, to be honest.
No.
I wish I did. The Cardex is pretty limited. That is a factory sunroof, though.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. I always wanted a Beetle with the sunroof.
Yeah.
And
Are they particularly rare in Beetles?
Yeah,
is it like mostly Webastos and things like that they're chucked in? Or?
So like a decent ragtop is quite rare, especially in the UK.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And the nice thing about the VW ones is they're bloody huge.
All the way back,
that's a little one, but it's really good. It's because taller people's heads can go out.
How does it work? Functionality, is it just like a kick, or is it to come out and go underneath?
It goes underneath.
Oh, sweet!
It's really good.
That is quite modern, isn't it, from back in the day?
But it's fully mechanical, there's no electric.
No, of course not.
The wiggling and winder had this whiny little motor to open it up, there for like 2 hours watching it slowly do it.
How times have changed, right? And now you've got like 10 seconds, like brand new 911 or something. It's like seven seconds of 40 mile an hour and the thing's just gliding back.
But
it wasn't that long ago.
This is quicker.
I can
do that in like a second.
Exactly. So,
man.
Love it.
No,
it's so cool.
Thanks, man.
Are you adding anything to the collection now? Or are you pretty comfortable with where you are with it all? Because the history shows that like there's been things coming and going, so but I gotta be honest, you got a 964, a beautiful 356, a couple of other little bits, some, you know, VW buses and stuff, and
The blue single cab is the most recent one, and I've always wanted a Dove Blue stock as a rock single cab,
right?
So, and it's ribbed bumper as well, so it's real early. It came from San Jose.
You imported it, or
I didn't know, but I found someone who did.
Right.
And I've also got a Bolivian 15 window bus.
Yes, we talked about that. Yeah. Right.
And then I've still got the Green Beetle. So.
Love it.
Yeah, man.
That's enough, isn't it?
That's too much. That's too much. It's really annoying because I'd really, really love a 993.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it's
what spec would that be if you could? Because it sounds like you knew, you know, the bus, for example, you knew exactly what colour, everything. But what would the 993 look like if you managed to stumble on one?
I'm really into it's like Japanese culture.
Okay.
So I love RWB.
You do?
Yeah, I love modified cars. So RWB is amazing. And
cool.
It like mixes Porsche Japan modified.
It's cool.
Kind of holy grail. But I've never probably owned one because, you know, quite limiting. But I'd love something that's like low, maybe like wide body, real low, dark color or white. Like, again, I wouldn't want it to match, but I just, there's something about like Japan and white cars.
Yeah, there is, totally. So,
like, I like the
maybe if like importing something from Japan, a white 903.
Or some kind of Larry kit, like a Gembala kit or something. Yeah.
Do you know what would be quite cool is to see if you could take something that was, that looks awkward now, like Gembala or something like that. They're a bit like, but at the same time, I'm sure if you spent some time as a designer with a designer head, you could go, I could modernise that. I could work with that.
Yeah. I like stuff that's a bit weird. And to be honest, I sort of I hope I don't offend people, but I sort of find the 993 a bit of an ugly duckling.
Yeah, no, I get that.
From the rear, it's 10 out of 10, but from the front, like it's all
I think for me, it's kind of where the, you know, it's like the idea is you should be able to draw a car with three pen strokes. It's like it doesn't. It almost like you need to start from the bottom and whip round. It's got this. I think it's the nose. It's a bit weird.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But then I would have said that about the 996. It was always the C pillar for the 996. I was like, it looks a bit weird to me. But they've aged. They're coming right back round again. And
the early ones, I absolutely adore. Again, there's been some Japanese ones that look just phenomenal.
Really cool.
Yeah, there was a couple that really turned my head. I'm not in colours I wouldn't have expected as well. But I don't know, maybe it's just the photography or the fact that it's really low. But something about it really, really captivated me. But yeah.
So stay tuned then. So if you're in the UK and you, I mean, there's a guy primed for sale here, so.
No, I don't want one. I don't have space. One day. If someone does find a really nice 993 and I can get it without my wife knowing, then yeah, happy days.
Just chuck it under the cover, mate, and pretend.
Yeah. Fine. It's a 356, honestly.
Exactly.
It's a bus.
I think it's time to go for a drive. So,
yeah, should we hit it?
Yeah, but yeah, so stick around and we'll have another look.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the episode. A standard classic response from me at the end of those episodes. Coming up in the next couple of weeks, I'm looking at the content I've got booked and banked already, and trying to figure out what a nice way of doing it is. Because one of the things I do know is that the introduction, the proper introduction to the REM 550 is really needed. And some of those tech talks that I've recorded and kind of they're in process to be edited but haven't been edited yet, they kind of center on me developing my supplier network and my supply chain for the REM 550, those partner relationships that are absolutely critical to building a car on the channel. But I don't want to do that without actually showing you and talking to you more about the REM 550. So I'm currently looking at what I've got left in the stack, what heritage episodes I've got left and what tech talks I've got left before we move on to new content. So expect to see something soon on the REN 550. For now though, thank you ever so much for listening. I hope you've really enjoyed the podcast. I hope you enjoy the series of these podcasts. I'll be back every Thursday. So you can always check back on Thursdays and you'll see a new update. YouTube videos go out on a Sunday evening. If you've got any interest in being on the channel yourself, you can absolutely do that. This is a very humble beginnings podcast and YouTube channel. It's for everybody, right? So if you're listening to this and you've got an interesting story to tell, get in touch. If you don't have a Porsche yet and you're considering that and you're thinking, well, what do I get? And you've got a budget, as you might have heard in a couple of episodes back, Mick and I started talking about a friend of mine who was looking at potentially buying a Porsche. He's gone the other way. He's gone to BMW again. So he's going to look at buying a BMW, but you can't win them all. But if you're in that situation and you're looking at it and you've got a budget, throw me a DM at RenEngineeringUK or info@RenEngineering.com, and Mick and I will look at your budget and talk it through and figure out what our recommendation is for that budget. For now though, hope you have a lovely week and I will see you all very soon. Take care for now. Bye-bye. One take, both episodes.